Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Jim, for inviting me. I'm Ward Cunningham. I ran into Jim. Well, we worked together here for a couple years in the patterns and practices. And, you know, I have a lot of fondness for Microsoft, which I think is a great company. I did want to mention, because it's been a while now, and people may not know me, but I took this picture. I was there, and I'm on that list in the first column, Ward Cunningham. This was a very special time. This was a meeting of consultants, and consultants get to be consultants by being very good in business or whatever. You know, they climb some rank till there's nowhere else to climb, and they leave the company and go be a consultant. And after a while, you think about it, they're the people who are making it their business to take everything that they know and share it with people who don't have people like them working for their companies. And that's what this was. Of course, everybody had their own idea of what good was, and the only thing that held them in common is we wanted to see, you know, kind of less bureaucracy. It was convened as the lean methodology workshop, and but there was this very special time where all of a sudden this stuff got written on the board. And there's a little confusion about who wrote it, but we really felt that, like everybody's looking at this and says, my God, that is exactly what we all hold in common. And, you know, it was like in awe. And you know, so I was one of the, I was, you know, I think there were a couple cameras, but I had a camera and it was in my pocket, so I got on a chair and I took the picture. And then I kind of fuzzed it a little because this isn't really about us. We just thought we needed a kind of a poster website to share this work, and it's had a big impact. So Jim and I were both at the kind of 10-year reunion of the Agile Manifesto, which was this summer, and had a big panel and a lot of questions. One question was, well, knowing now, what do you wish you had done differently? And I just had to look at the audience and I said, you know, I wish I worked harder at color balancing this picture. So what I wanted to do, you know, Jim said I could talk about anything I want, and there's an awful lot of Agile here, so I thought instead of being repetitious, I've kind of launched off into some new stuff in the last year. I thought I ought to kind of show you what's going on, and maybe you can get a sense of what it's like to some degree, to go against the grain, to say, I'm going to do things differently, you know, even though everybody says that I should be doing it some other way. And that, you know, is because our industry moves pretty fast, there's a lot of that needs to go on. But I wanted to start by, talking about gas mileage. And, you know, I decided to get real specific about gas mileage here because I gave this talk where Tom Gilb was president. And Tom is a, you know, Agile methodology guy before any of us knew what Agile was. But he's also very into measuring things. And so I thought I ought to get some good measures. This is not actually my car. I pulled that off the Internet. And even got the number off the Internet. I think I get more like 22 or 23 in my Jeep. But, you know, the important thing is that that's not very good by modern standards. And I was kind of thinking, you know, my Jeep was getting old and maybe I ought to get myself, you know, a nice new car. And I'm thinking 50 miles a gallon sounds a lot better. And I'm, you know, looking at these cars and they're pretty pricey and I just didn't feel rich enough to buy one. You know, so I didn't get around to it. And then my car got stolen, you know, and that it take, you know, in as consultants you say there's no change if there's no pain, right? So all of a sudden I had the pain, you know, I couldn't believe car sales were in a real slump. I went into car dealerships and they descended on me in a very unpleasant way, and I just walked out. I said, screw it, I'm not going to buy a car, and you know, so that's what forced me to reset. And I like this word reset. You know, I think in the world we're kind of facing a point where there's going to be a big reset. And reset isn't necessarily bad, but, you know, from this side of the reset, it doesn't look so good. Having your car stolen shouldn't be an exciting thing, but it turned out in my case, you know, it was, because I discovered I was way too dependent on my car and stopped thinking about it. Now, the good news is after 5 months, maybe if it's not good news, but 5 months later, the car shows back up again. It had been parked on a suburban side street, you know, for 5 months, and someone finally called the police and says, get this car out of here, and they looked it up and with a VIN number knew it was mine. And I'm thinking, you know, I finally learned how to ride the buses. What do I want with this car, right? You know, so, you know, I made myself a little promise, and that was to only gas it up once a season, you know, to just not drive it. You know, I set that goal just so that I wouldn't, like, fall into the habit of driving the car, to stay, you know, on the bikes and the buses and stuff like that, because there's a lot of reasons I like that. So here was my goal, 3 months between fill-ups, and in Tom Gilb's thing, I said, well, most, you know, that would be, with my size tank, that would be about 100 miles a month, and that's about 10x better than average. So, you know, I tell this people, you know, fill up every season, and it sounds dramatic, but it doesn't compare well with the Prius. You know, so what I did is I said, I took that 10x, and I call what I, like a full-time equivalent. You know, people in HR do this all the time, right? Full-time equivalent employee. Well, I have a full-time equivalent gas mileage, and so my Jeep now gets 204 miles per gallon full-time equivalent. And that's bragging rights, right? Because I know we've got these people here coming tomorrow, or is it the day after tomorrow, with a car that gets 100 miles a gallon, you know, and it's a pretty neat car, you know, built agile. Have you guys up on this? It's going to be a big thing. But when you see this, just tell him, you know a guy gets 204 miles, and he didn't even have to buy a new car, right? So now what I like about this is, you know, and Tom makes a big point, you know, what you measure is what you improve, and miles per gallon is not what we want to improve. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having good miles per gallon, but what we want to do is change how we think about how we consume anything. And my decisions of how I travel are in this loop, right? So I have to tell you, I drove up here in my Jeep, you know, and that's about 3 months worth of gas, right? You know, so my average is not going to be great here going forward. It's going to be look more like 20 miles per gallon, but that's a choice that I make, and it hurts to drive my Jeep when I think about it. So this is a big deal. So, oh, by the way, just for Tom, you know, this is all off of government sites, those numbers. There it is, you know, 204 miles per gallon. Now, this is, for me, was a reset, and I like to reset things. I like to think about, oh, everybody says you got to do this. Well, what if we did the opposite, right? What would it be like if we did the opposite? And usually it's pretty stupid, but sometimes it's great. You know, like, instead of planning, let's just not plan at all. Let's just jump in and write the code. Right, that turned out to be good enough. I do this over and over. You know, it's what I like to do, and so now I want to take you back to 2005. In addition to taking that agile picture, I also made the first wiki, and that got me a keynote position in the first ever Wikimania conference. And I've been digging through the slides. This isn't the whole talk, but this is some pretty good slides, because my presentation I called, you know, what's the prehistory of Wiki, what did I think I was doing, and where do I think it's going. So this will segue into the talk about what I've actually done in the last, you know, few months, but back to 2005. And, you know, as I'm in 2005 kind of reflecting on my childhood, you know, I said I'd always had this fascination with computers as a communication device. And I don't know if anybody recognizes those colors, but that's mimeograph colors. This that was a duplication technology when I was in college, and I made this little mimeograph thing with a typewriter and my pen, and I said, you know, every computer ought to have a radio attached, and those radios ought to form a grid and do a stored and forward networking thing. And people should own the radios. You know, there should be their own radio. CB was the craze at the time, and home computing was just starting. And I thought you could own them both, and you'd have a computer that communicated. And I thought that was a pretty cool thing. I actually simulated it and got an A in my simulation class, college course, graduate level college course. I also turned the same program into a networking class and got an A on that too. Two A's with one program. Pretty sharp. But now, 2005 again, I'm reflecting on what I was dreaming about, which had actually come to pass. It turns out it wasn't actually radio that made Wikipedia happen, but there is this profound shifts in technology every now and then. You know, like in the Roman era, you know, they were like really getting into writing, and they're really getting into roads, a representation and a communication mechanism carrying, you know, scrolls around up and down Roman roads. Same with the printing press, big change, really enabling for how we think of science today. Of course, there's a lot more going on there, but, you know, that the representation is in some sort of thesis printed on paper and circulated in the scientific community really depends upon the printing press. And, of course, now we live in this world with fabulous integrated circuits. It's just amazing what you can do with an integrated circuit. And fiber optics is fabulous, too. And it's in this last world that Wikipedia exists. Wikipedia couldn't exist in the printing press era. You know, we know Encyclopedia Britannica is what could exist there, and they're darn expensive. So the fact that you can have Encyclopedia in, you know, 350 languages or whatever it is right now, pretty amazing. So I'm this is me patting the Wikipedians on their back. You know, nice going, guys. And but then I wanted to say, well, you know, I was there before you, and I know that there's limits to growth. And in 2005, my wiki had already plateaued. And actually, this is kind of a conceptual thing. It felt like it was actually declining. Traffic was still going up, but it just wasn't as cool a traffic as it was in the first 5 years. And by the way, a lot of Agile stuff was test-driven on wiki. The vocabulary of Agile was written on pages in the wiki before it was written in books and other people's blog sites. But, you know, in 2005, Wikipedia was really, you know, pretty clearly on this exponential thing. And I just said, hey, realistically, exponentials don't go on forever. That's called the limits of growth. And, you know, we now know, by the way, you can go to the website, and they show this very chart, and it looks just like mine. It just goes up from this point in 2005, it goes up another order of magnitude before it hits the ceiling. And it hits the ceiling, and they're really kind of wringing their hands right now about this hitting the ceiling. In fact, I meant to bring, you know, the strategic plan and open to the graph that looks just like the black one, but it's Wikipedia's. You know, it turns out there any kind of time you have exponential growth, you hit this limit of growth. The term is actually from a book that came out when I was in college called Limits of Growth, and it basically had people doing computer simulations of population and resource usage and stuff like that. And it always crashed around somewhere between 2005 and 2015. You know, kind of right about now, it crashed. And the important thing I was telling the Wikipedians was that before mine finished, I changed the world. And Wikipedia had not yet changed the world. Agile methods spun out of there. But then I said, what are you guys going to do? And suggested this is the subject that I think Wikipedia should be applied to going forward. And that is helping us get through that crash, not of Wikipedian authors, but of just every, you know, thing we consume on this earth, because it's a big deal. It's not an easy transition to make. And you know, in this Limits to Growth book, it said, well, it's going to, actually, it was worse than this. All their simulators, it would go up to here, it would start faltering, and then it would, like, drop down. Like, oh, it was terrible. Just scary. But, of course, that's where their simulator stopped having any clue what was going to happen. You do know it's going to plateau, but you don't know what happens after that. And that's where we are now. We're figuring out what's going to happen after that. How are we going to go forward? Because we know we're not going to go forward the same way we got here. Simple logic. So I said, this is what we got to work on. This is a reframing. I called it then. I think reset is a better term. I think of it as reframing, but, you know, for the world, it's going to feel like, oh, yeah, that's where we reset. And, so I was thinking about this for a long time. I mentioned this here, kind of bragging about it. I've been telling people this is what I think of Wiki, no matter what the Wikipedians think. And I always felt that it should be a distributed network, that there shouldn't be some centralized place where the definitive truth is. It actually works pretty well in some cases, but it leads to, some bozos having too much power and, the invention of wiki spam and stuff like that. So I always look to kind of biological systems or cultural systems are kind of like biological system. Here I was imagining how folk tales distribute around the world and how they tend to be a little more true than even what the Grimm brothers wrote once they owned that printing press, because they took Little Red Riding Hood and said, it's so cruel that she gets eaten by the wolf. Let's just change that, and people will buy more of our books. And they had the hunter comes and saves Little Red Riding Hood. And that wasn't how it worked. That destroyed the moral teaching of the folktale, because, in fact, no hunter's going to come along and save Little Red Riding Hood. And, so I thought that this distributed system could be more true. And of course, I was imagining it as being an object server, because as an object guy, I also felt kind of bad that I didn't have object-oriented programming in that wiki in the beginning. And I was going to, so here I say objects, and, objects are, I love them, but, it isn't how we think these days. Simple objects, we live with the rest. It's not the number one thing. But what's here, I'm trying to show that there could be different servers sharing, proliferation. That proliferation, boy, if there's one thing we're taught to not do, it's to not have an important number in two different places where they could disagree. Accountants, they don't care whether the balance is right as long as it's defined in only one place. Right, so then that's argument stopping. Well, so I'm imagining, biology works a different way. You got some genes, you spread them as fast as you can. And so I'm imagining, the sea of wikis all talking to each other, all kind of trading pages back and forth. And over in one corner, we got some extremists. And another corner, we got some other kind of extremists. But, they don't talk to each other, but enough people kind of track back and forth that there's actually a trail that goes between the two, and it's often that trail where conversation, I don't want to say moderated. That sounds like it's a happy medium. But let's just say some new thinking is happening that kind of acknowledges what's important on one extreme and acknowledges what's important on the other extreme and finds some new framing of a problem that leads to progress. So we could talk about whether we like capitalistic incentives to business to grow. Well, maybe not. You might get the impression that I was in 2005 saying, they'll come an end to this. Or you might say equal distribution of wealth. Well, where's the incentive there? There's a lot of we are really ready for some rethinking. And I think that creating a communication medium that will host that conversation would be pretty neat. In fact, I've kind of took my old slides and stuck some new stuff in here. This is my new wiki. I've been working on it for about 3 or 4 months, working kind of slow and carefully because I want to get this Federation stuff right. I want it to be something. In fact, these are two welcome visitor pages that have been copied back and forth to two different sites. You can tell they're different sites because there's different colors in the corner. And the one thing I want to mention is that You know, these are licensed such that you're free to kind of grab and move stuff around. That paragraph has a history as it's been moved from the brown site to the pale blue site. And the pale blue site remembers down in this little thing in the bottom that it came from the brown site. So there's a kind of motion back and forth. And that's my vision of using the technology here in 2011 to try to build this thing that I've been thinking about since 1997. I finally allowed myself to go into build mode because I took this position to work in the open data community. And that is, I have the title for 1 year as the Code for a Better World Fellow, which I reduced to Open Data Fellow. And my sponsor is Nike's Sustainable Business and Innovation Group. So Nike's a nice company. They happen to be in my hometown. Excellent company. You know, just like Microsoft is excellent and draws some flack sometimes, deservedly or undeservedly. Nike's a great company and draws some flack sometimes, deservedly or undeservedly. But they drew a lot of flack for running sweatshops, you know, 10 years ago. And they founded a group to get to the bottom of that. And that group has grown to 130 people in the Sustainable Business and Innovation Group. It used to be called the Corporate Responsibility Group, but they sort of got that kind of under control. And now they're thinking, okay, sustainability is a big deal, right? And they're looking at this exponential growth and plateau and all that and trying to figure out, how do we be a manufacturing company in the future? How do we... Anyway, this is the only slide that I got from them. They have lots of slides. Boy, they sure know how to make slides. That is one thing I learned. They also love capital letters. They use very few lowercase letters on their slides. So if I'm presenting to them, all caps, man. But the thing you notice here is, like 2010, price of cotton spikes dramatically, right? And I think that's what the future is going to be like in manufacturing, certainly in the apparel and footwear industry, lots of spikes. And they're trying to figure out, how do we prepare to be a company that's going to operate in that world? And their simple idea is, well, let's just not build any future business. Let's not build a business based on things that are going to be a scarce resource. You know, let's only build on things for which, you know, there's a renewable basis. And, well, it turns out it's actually kind of hard to figure that out, right? What is or isn't? You know, this is an area called life cycle analysis, and that knowledge is kind of locked up in a lot of little consulting groups' heads. And, you know, they invested dramatically in collecting enough information that they can make considered decisions when they're designing shoes, you know, having to do with kind of the rank order of materials in terms of sustainability. And, you know, it's a mess that, you know, the toxic load of a material is represented one way because, you know, one cancer agent is completely different than another cancer agent. But the energy consumption of making a material, you know, is kind of fungible, you know, whether it's oil or electricity or whatever, because a joule is a joule. And so, you know, of course, all these different scientists that are tracking down this stuff talk a different language. So anyway, so that's when I'm starting thinking, okay, I'm going to be open data, talk about how this is going to work, and I laid out this picture. I said, look, you know, from what I know is if you're going to use technology to create a community, there's got to be leadership. I said, these are the three things that you got to do. You know, I was kind of doing this back, you know, when I did the first wiki. I think the agile community, this leadership is important. Without leadership, people just don't know what to do with your technology. They don't know why they're in your community. So if you want the community to use technology, technology is really the simplest thing to do in this picture, to make a new technology. So simple that I can even do it, right? But I'm also telling them, we're going to deploy this thing, and you've got to provide leadership. In fact, I draw a picture that looks like this. I said, this is your side. This is your leadership. You're the global manufacturer. You understand, you know, how all this stuff works. You've got to talk to other global manufacturers and lead them. This is my side. This is the technology side. I'm going to go do something for you that is pretty cool technology. This is the tool I'm suggesting they use. This is the new wiki, the federated wiki. I'll put whatever you need in there to hold your community. And this is the community I'm using. This is GitHub. Any GitHub people here? Yeah, GitHub's pretty cool. GitHub took forking. Used to be in an open source project, being forked was a real insult. That meant you were doing a bad job. And GitHub transformed that. Forking a GitHub project is a kindest compliment. And I'm proud to already be forked like 45 times. So I'm producing. Let's hold the questions to the end. If you think about it, what GitHub has done is they've taken this idea that there's one place for the right answer and said, screw that. You know, we're just going to be all over the place. And I'm saying, let's take this one place for the right answer and say, screw that. Let's be all over the place to create an environment that will allow for the creativity to reframe issues that are really stuck. So this is what's going on. By the way, I called this something. I suggested we just knock this out in a weekend, so I called it the smallest federated wiki. And I'm a little embarrassed by that because it's not as small as it was. It's still struggling to be federated. And I show other people and they say, Ward, why do you call that a wiki? You know, so I sort of three strikes here on the name, but I said, look, I call it a wiki because I can call it a wiki, right? And if it turns out to be something different than a wiki but still important, I'll drop the name. But I think that what it is in essence to be a wiki, you know, that word's pretty diluted too, that I can achieve that in a fully federated way. Now, the other thing I did is I started with narrow, you know, chance to do this over again. Everybody spreads a page out. You know, I said, hey, let's have really narrow. This is me holding my phone saying, hey, look at it. I can just roll through these pages. I just want anybody who's a decision maker, whenever the topic that could be answered by data comes up, that they just reach in their pocket and say, this is what my data says, right? That they have data with them. Data turned into information, turned into knowledge, turned into wisdom. You know, but that process isn't going to happen on the phone. That process is going to happen on a laptop where you can put some pages up and look at them left to right, you know, move things around. Or it's going to even happen on a big screen. There'll still be a role for big screens because look at how many pages I can get up there, all with little data on it. So this is my go at another big reset, and I hope it works. I was trying to explain that, you know, I'm using technology to kind of coerce people to behave a different way in a community. I don't call myself a community manager, but I'm kind of engineering community. And I'm thinking, well, who else does that? That's the economists do that, right? They say, here's monetary policy that's going to cause people to behave a different way. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I invented a new dismal science, right? And it is dismal, you know, in the sense that you don't really control people. People do whatever they damn well please. But I want to show you two little pictures to kind of give you a hint of what I'm thinking about. One is in Wiki. What I did is I said, let's put publication and review in a loop, and let's start with publication. Everybody else said, let's review, 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 and when it's really good enough, then we publish, and then we're done. And I said, no, let's start by publishing, and then review, and publish and review, and publish and review. Put that all in a loop. And, of course, people look at that and they say, oh, my God, there could be mistakes, right? You could be reading something that could be wrong. But the important thing is the loop time dramatically shorter. You know, it used to take, like, you know, somebody had published something in Science, and it would take 3 months to get into the, you know, publication, and then another 3 months for a letter to get in there. So 6 months is time around the loop. You know, and I get that down to 6 minutes. Right, you know, so that's pretty sweet. Big change. Another one that I'm thinking about, this is federation. You know, I want forks to just happen all over the place. I want attribution so that whatever you happen to see, you can go back to the source. You know, we do this with the computers. We can keep enough records. And I want information from elsewhere to come in and put it together. I want aggregating of data. So that's my big thing. What I get to do is I get to sort of record footprints so you can kind of see where other people have gone. In biology, they call this stigmergy or something. It's how ants can kind of follow a trail. It creates emergent behavior. And signpost. You know, if you find something really good, you've got to be able to say, hey, I think this is good. So footprints and signposts are the affordances where I can support forks and attribution and aggregation. So I always hesitate to do a live demo, so I got a canned one here. this is what I did is I'm doing this in the open. It's all open source. And what I do is I try to, like, every weekend to do a little video. This is, like, week two, so it's just really kind of coming together.
So I'd like to show you the refactoring facilities of the smallest federated wiki. Of course, like most wikis, this one has both internal and external links. But an internal link, here's one to the Indie Web Camp. This is where this was started. But an idea at the Indie Web Camp was that everybody would own their own pages, and we think that an internal link could be inside the Federation, not just inside your server. Now, that means that we're going to have to figure out how we're going to manage content between multiple servers, and that's where multiple views come in handy. Over here, there we go. Here's three different pages up on the wiki at the same time. I've shown you how easy it is to move content within a page.
That was video one.
But it's also possible to move content between pages. This works for paragraphs. It works for images. So another exciting thing is we have data here. Here's some data. We can move data around just as easily. Now what's important here is this information can be stored in anybody's server. If I look down here, let's move this, I was going to move this data up here where we could see it nicely. There's a JSON content for whatever content is on this page. Here's what it looks like. That's the data. This is the story, the paragraphs, including a paragraph, including data. Here's some paragraphs, including text. Type paragraph, type chart. We'll look through here. We'll probably find some images. I'm not spotting one. But that's the idea. The thing that this does is it makes it easy to move the content between different sites. In fact, each site could have its own version of the JavaScript engine or the JavaScript code that brings this JSON to life. That doesn't matter. What's important is that the basic and straightforward schema that we have in this JSON can be shared between a wide variety of sites.
So this was number two. I think I got about 12 up there now. So there's the link. That's the only link worth remembering. It's myname.github.com. A lot of nice videos. And now I want to show you kind of the representation behind those pages. Yet, you know, of course, on Wikipedia, you know, the wiki markup has gotten to be kind of a mess. They did some brilliant things, and they're suffering for it. What I've done is I said, well, I'm just going to go with JSON, which turns out to be kind of the JavaScript-friendly, lightweight version of XML. And I think of it as, a page is a forest of trees. Every tree is a different thing, probably a paragraph. What I do is I group some of them together in an array, and I call that the story. That's what you're trying to tell on the page. And then I keep, down at the bottom, you saw those little gray squares. That's the journal. That's the history of how the page got to be the way it is. And so this is my kind of top-level schema. A couple other things snuck in there, but these are the two important ones. And what's neat is, you know, you can get an image into a JSON, just fine, or big data sets and so forth. But the way I think of it is if you're doing ordinary things, then we'll deliver a system, that you can use on your site that, will do the ordinary things. But if you want to do more, if you want to have like complex visualizations or really hairy data sets, then you have to extend it by making new plugins. So there's this sort of boundary, and here I'm showing two data sets on this one page that are bigger than the standard plugins that have information. They might be bigger in complexity and not maybe size, but it might be size or whatever. So this is meant to grow, and of course my model there is what's become of templates on Wikipedia, which are amazingly complex. Templates turn out to be a really lousy, you know, it's macro expanding as a paradigm for computing. And anybody who's ever tried to like write a compiler in macros knows that it you know, looks promising and it lets you down. And so I'm using JavaScript. You know, I say let's do it all on the client. Let's bring the JSON down to the client. Let's use JavaScript on the client and just make it great. Now, by the way, does anybody notice that JavaScript got real fast all of a sudden? Right? You know, and that's enabling technology. This is what plugins look like. This is, I don't know if you can really see that, but up there on it's paragraph, then image, then chart, then factory, and change, and a few others. And I just have two little functions, one called emit, which will construct a page, you know, so you can read these pages in dynamically, and bind hooks up all the interaction. So emit and bind is all you need to do. These are pretty short because they call into library routines. Good time for a demo? Maybe not. You know, last I looked, sorry for that browser. Let me just show you a few pages. You know, I've been having a little bit of a struggle with the net. Here's a plugin that does typesetting. Cool JavaScript library called MathJax that will do that from a variety of different formats. Let's see. These are a little too big for the display here. This is Apache as my web server serving static pages. What I do is every 5 minutes I go consult my own little database of sensor values on my home network and produce a list of pages. Here what I did is I produced that list, and each one, when I drill down to it, will bring up. Here's a sensor, which is this is my son's bird that he keeps in the basement, and this is the history of the temperature in that cage. What I think is really interesting here is that if I do it right, oh, there it is. I can pull a visualization from one page and have it look at a data set on another page. So I do this dynamic binding. First of all, when this visualization comes up, it looks for data on the page. If it doesn't find anything, it says, hey, is there anything else in the DOM? So by pulling pages together, up together, you're actually creating an environment where you want to do visualization. And so I think that there's going to be people who are exploring the art and science of visualization based on these great JavaScript interpreters and, you know, SVG, DOM things. Just, it's a wonderful time to be doing visualization. And it's a wonderful time to be opening up data sets because we really need to have this data. And so letting that come together. Let's see what else I have. This is one that's kind of cool. This is, you know, I wanted an ability to compute. And see if I can get this window the right size, it'll look better. There we go. This is one where I just took this old, this is a file. I was trying to reconcile the expenses for my trip to Jackson Hole in 1981. And I just had this pile of receipts, and a couple other engineers wanting to know how I was going to reconcile this, and I just typed them in. And then I realized that, gosh, if I just put words where I wanted sums and brought those words forward down at the bottom, I could say who owes what whom, and even double check to see if there's any unaccounted funds. So if I show you what this looks like, look, I can just scroll through that. In fact, if I come over here and say, well, maybe the Cowboy Steakhouse was more expensive than I realized, I'll change that to 171. And when I save that, you know, 171, oops, I'm not working my own mouse very well here. So it redoes all the numbers. You know, people have been doing this for years, but, you know, another thing that's kind of cool about that is, it's actually not very complicated. That was called a calculator. All right, so maybe I picked a bad example. It is kind of. So it's 50 lines, but you know, the first 15 of it is boilerplate. This is a little interpreter, just recognizes that. I did have up here, I had the one that did the math abstraction. That thing's a lot shorter because it's all in a library. I just call a library. Well, I think I better kind of wind it up here if we're going to have any time for questions. I'm going to skip a few slides. This whole notion of reset, here's the one that I'm looking at forward that I care about, and that is, and this is Alan Wirschbrock, who spent a number of years here helping make JavaScript really fast, you know, points out that, you know, we see these things, this cascade, this replaces that, but there's some things that just continue forever. And he says, like, corporate computing isn't going away. Now, personal computing got built on top of corporate computing, but somewhere along the line, the time sharing and the mini computer, which helped get us to personal computing, they're history. And so he says there's going to be another sort of thing built on top of personal computing that he calls ambient computing. You know, there was a time that you might call it pervasive computing, but I think ambient really catches this notion that we're going to create our own environment. And he says things like a cell phone and World Wide Web, they're going to be history too. They're transitional, but this ambient computing is a thing that's going to last. And so it's worth thinking about that. He calls those transitional technologies. And I really believe this. This is where we're going. We're going to think about computers differently. And that we need to kind of think in big terms about the world we're making with those computers. And with that, you know, what I'm spending my time is looking for people who will help me think about big issues. You know, it's not just getting the developers to talk to operations or the test or even the usability people, for heaven's sakes, if we ever get that to happen. But there's also talking about, you know, creating businesses, but it's also creating the environment in which business works. You know, what does it mean to have a business when growth is no longer the primary measure? And I think that's a really important question. I'm sorry I went on so long, but if you'll allow me to run over just a little bit, we'll happy to take some questions. I know we had one if I didn't answer it already. Yes?
You did answer, but you raised another one.
Good talk then, huh?
So there are a lot of people who kind of started dialogues on the internet, and then they've gone 4:10. So you've got, you know, a conversation started, and then you've got a reference and attribution back to the start of the conversation, but that's gone. So in terms of federating a wiki, when one of those repositories disappears, what do you do?
Yeah, so the question is, how do we keep the thread going back? And I think what's going to happen is, if this idea has been through 10 computers, the record probably has to identify all 10 computers. Because some of those in the middle are going to disappear. I don't think anybody's going to be there forever, you know, including my wiki, I hate to say. The other thing that I think is important is that a lot of people in distributed computing start out with the assumption, how can we make distributed computing be like one computer? And I'm starting out differently. I'm saying, what if being distributed brings along with it the characteristics that we have not had until now? Right, that distributing computing has properties like being able to forget things that are really important because we've built our computers to, you know, the accountant's specifications, that we've never really built them right until now. Another question? Oh, yes.
From an information architecture perspective, how do you see this differing from, say, Twitter? Obviously, I understand that the underlying technology is owned by one company with Twitter, but in terms of what actually happens to the information, how does it differ?
How is this different than Twitter? So copying from one page to another is like retweeting. And if there's one thing we've learned in the last few years, that people don't want to type too much, right? They also don't want to read too much, right? So getting nuggets. So if I'm successful, people will find a way to tell a story in a series of tweet-sized paragraphs that are pretty manipulable. And as they move from place to place, they'll be arranged and it'll tell different variations in the story, and I think that's going to be good. So yeah, Twitter is an inspiration for me, no doubt. Yes?
So you think about link diagram, where you link to something and then you add some extra annotations or attributes or something to that. You compare it with what you're suggesting. Is it really that when you link to something, you copy it and then you annotate your copy?
Yes. So I create forks by just editing anybody's site. And when I grab somebody's site and start editing, the pages I edit just become mine. So it's just implicit, with a reference back to where they came from. And I think that this is actually really good with data, because what I might actually be doing is applying some scaling or statistical sampling or something like that. I could be applying algorithms to it, and I don't want to say that you have to look at the data through my algorithms. So there is a kind of class of things. Like if I'm making an encyclopedia, maybe Wikipedia's got that one nailed. You know, it will be different. Yes?
One of the interesting things, for example, Twitter and other of these big bunches of text, basically, is that you can search them and you can find stuff.
Yes.
Are you thinking about searching for things that are similar so that you can compose your story? Because there's a lot of information, and by having to click around and read it all, it might be hard to...
Is there anybody from Bing here? You know, because I'd love to show them my format, and they'll figure out how to recognize the duplication and find the authoritative... I believe that can be done, and my proof point is the fact that they can find these old genomes and bones from Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons and figure out that they were doing it, right? You know, and that's... You know, so we can piece together information for things we really care about, like was Gene all right about them doing it, and for everything else, it'll just be lost. You know, I'm okay with a loss as long as we can reframe where we're going in the future and make it a wonderful place. By the way, there is a subtlety there. If I go back and link to your site where I got your data, and your site links to another page on your site that I have a copy of, I'll get mine. So there's this sort of like hiding, which you see in object-oriented programming. But I can actually go to your site and be on your site through typical web stuff, and then I'll follow your linking protocol instead of mine. So your site seen through mine looks differently than if I just go to your site and look at your site. And the fact that there's a choice. It's just more proliferation. All right, with that, well, I'll take one more question, because I'm vain. But then this will be the last question, so it better be good.
Well, you were talking about copying from one person's site to another person's site. With Creative Commons, you can say, I allow you to copy this for non-commercial reasons, but not commercial ones,
yeah,
or for anything. And you're probably going to have these little impedances where people allow different things. Do you just leave it wide open, or is there any kind of...
So what license will all this copying happen? And I was suggesting a Creative Commons attribution share alike. I've been reading stuff recently that says that share alike is actually problematic and maybe it should be Creative Commons attribution. But I'm going to suggest one, and then it'll probably proliferate there too, and there'll be a little bit of, you know, maybe what we'll do is we'll get the computer to say, no, you can't edit that. You know, manage that somehow with brilliant computer stuff. All right, so thank you for your attention. I'll be around here today and a lot of tomorrow, and would love to talk to you personally. Again, this is out in the open. I'd love you to go up there and fork my site and write some cool code with it, and maybe even save the world.